Okay. Let's go back on the record. And Ms. Krause, you may call your next witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sakakawea would call Kathleen Spillman.
Ms. Spillman, before we begin your testimony, I need to advise you about the penalties for perjury in North Dakota. The maximum penalty for perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum $10,000 fine, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Would you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony that you're about to give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the penalties of perjury?
I do.
Thank you. Ms. Krause?
Could you please state your full name for the record?
Kathleen Marie Spillman.
And by whom are you employed?
K2 Engineers and Consultants.
What is your business address?
1403 27th Street Northwest in Mandan, North Dakota, 58554.
And what is your position with K2?
Managing Director.
Could you just briefly discuss your education and work history?
I have a Bachelor's of Science in Chemical Engineering from the University of North Dakota. I have a master's in management from the University of Mary at Bismarck. I have 35 years of experience in the petroleum refining and fuel transportation field, as well as regulatory affairs and compliance.
And were you involved in preparation of the application, which is Exhibit 1, before the commission today?
Yes, I was.
And what was your role with respect to the proposed project?
I was the managing director for the environmental permitting team.
And what were some of your duties in this position?
I oversaw the staff selection, the assignments of individual tasks within the project, quality control of the field studies, preparation of the permit application documents, coordination of any of the subcontractors for the project as well.
Okay, and I just want to touch briefly on just a basic overview of the project site and the approach to the site analysis. Could you just give a general description of the site environment?
The project will be located in rural Montreal County. Farming and ranching is the predominant land use. Of land crossed by the route, approximately 59% is cultivated crops, 37% is herbaceous plants, 1% is wetlands or open water, and 3% is trees or shrubs.
And could you discuss the approach that was taken to perform the environmental analysis?
Studies were undertaken by K2 to evaluate the project's potential impacts to recreational, environmental, and cultural resources. We outsourced the archaeological study to Beaver Creek Archaeology of Bismarck. They performed both a Class 1, which was a record search using a 1-mile-wide corridor, and the subsequent Class 3 field survey using a 300-foot field pedestrian survey corridor. K2 conducted a 1-mile-wide database search for all other exclusion or avoidance criteria, including federal and state parks, protected and sensitive plants and animals, civil and social structures, including recreational areas, rural homes, and farmsteads. Looked for a botany study using a 500-foot-wide corridor and a 1-mile-wide corridor for wildlife.
And could I direct your attention to Tab 4 in Exhibit 1, specifically Appendix 4B.
Yes.
And do you recognize these maps?
Yes, I do.
Were they prepared under your supervision and control?
Yes.
And do they accurately depict the field survey, corridor, and findings for the proposed project?
I believe they do.
And I'll just have you briefly discuss some of the studies that were conducted, and why don't we start with the Class 1 search and the Class 3 cultural resource inventory.
The Class 1 cultural inventory revealed 36 sites, 19 site leads, and 2 isolated finds in a 1-mile radius surrounding the project route. The Class 3 field survey that was actually walked in the field provided a report that was submitted as part of the consolidated application as Appendix 4A. The pedestrian survey used a 300-foot-wide corridor centered on the pipeline centerline. There were 5 previously recorded sites and 1 newly recorded sites. All the sites will be avoided by the project construction. 4 of the sites are Native American stone features. One's located on Enbridge property. The site was excavated in 2013 by Metcalf and determined to be ineligible for the National Register of Historic Places, so no avoidance for that one is necessary. There was one stone feature. It was recommended as unevaluated in reference to the National Register of Historic Places criteria. The reroute was performed so that we will completely avoid impacting that area. And then two additional stone features were unevaluated and will be avoided by at least 100 feet during the construction. Two of the sites are historic or archaeological in nature. The archaeological site has been recommended as not eligible for the National Register of Historic Places listing, and therefore no reroute or avoidance was required. The historic archaeological site that was newly recorded is recommended as an unevaluated status, and Beaver Creek, our subcontractor, recommended that the site be avoided during construction by at least 125 feet. No features associated with the with the site will be impacted by the project. The previously recorded isolated find was within the survey corridor. However, the field team were unable to locate it at the time they did their studies. No evidence of site leads were observed within the survey area. No avoidance is recommended for those. And the recommendations, as I described, have been filed with the State Historic Preservation Office by Beaver Creek. And the subcontractor indicated that they recommended that the project proceed under a no historic property affected designation.
And you just referenced that this report was submitted to the State Historical Preservation Office. Could you turn to Exhibit 6, please?
Okay.
And could you describe what this document is?
This is a copy of the concurrence letter from the State Historic Preservation Office. It's dated August 21st, 2015. It concurs with a no significant site affected determination for the project. And this letter, I also believe, was included in our application.
Okay. And could you now discuss some of the findings from the wetland and water bodies findings, specifically if you would reference in Exhibit 1, Tab 3 on page 17, there's a table showing the wetland and water body crossings.
Okay, I'm there. The Sakaka, we have through K2 and our other consultants conducted a desktop study using aerial photographs and the USGS topographic maps, identifying Army Corps of Engineers waters of concern within North Dakota to identify wetlands along the project, the pipeline route. A jurisdictional determination was asked for and received from the Corps of Engineers. They determined of the water bodies listed, only two of them are jurisdictional, and they happen to be the first two that are listed in that particular table. Sakakawea has committed to boring both of these water bodies. The Lostwood Wetland Management District indicated that the United States Fish and Wildlife Service holds wetland easements that will be crossed by the proposed route. The wetlands will need to be avoided either by boring or rerouting, and Sakakawea has chosen to bore those designated wetlands in compliance with that request.
Okay, and could you discuss some of the results of the vegetation and wildlife surveys conducted?
Okay, the Sakakawea will implement the measures as outlined in their construction mitigation and reclamation plan to minimize the adverse effects on wetlands during construction and restore non-jurisdictional wetlands following construction.
Okay, so again, just briefly, could you discuss some of the vegetation and wildlife that were observed during the studies?
Investigations were conducted on potential impacts to wildlife and plant species. The sources included field surveys, literature reviews, and communication with agencies. From a vegetation standpoint, the botany surveys used a 500-foot wide corridor. The survey crossed mainly prairie, pasture land, cropland, and wetlands. No federally threatened or endangered species were identified within the proposed construction right-of-way or the survey corridor. There were a number of noxious weeds that were identified, and we've denoted those on the maps included in the application. From a wildlife perspective, we use a 1 mile wide corridor. As will be discussed in more detail with the exclusion areas, the project does cross a designated critical habitat for piping plover. Construction will have no significant effects on the state census species for North Dakota. We also identified 3 active raptor nests during the field survey. 2 of the nests were red-tailed hawks, and there was 1 nest associated with a great horned owl. When the raptor nests were found during the route planning stages, Sakakawea adjusted the route following the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service recommended spatial buffers and rerouted the pipeline to avoid impacts to the active nests found during the 2015 field surveys.
Okay, and I want to focus now on some of the specific PSC siting rules. Kathy, are you familiar with the exclusion areas, avoidance areas, selection criteria, and policy criteria?
Yes, I am.
And I want to focus first on the exclusion areas. Could you turn to tab 3 in Exhibit 1, specifically Table 3C1, and describe generally what's included in this table regarding exclusion areas?
That table is denoted in tab 3, page 25. The table depicts whether or not any of the exclusion areas are located within the 1 mile wide study area. The survey area, which is 300 foot for archaeology and 500 foot for the botany, and 1 mile for wildlife. And whether or not the exclusion area encompasses 50% of the survey area, and whether the exclusion area is crossed by the route, which is what we're referring to as the expected right-of-way.
Okay, and in the table, there's 2 areas, well, I guess 1 area specifically that is noted in the study area, and that would be areas critical to life stages of threatened or endangered animal or plant species. Could you just briefly discuss that exclusion area criteria?
As I mentioned previously, the application note that there were 3 raptor nests that were identified within the study areas, and these areas are included in the category just because many of the raptors are protected. Construction will occur, or expected to occur, outside the species buffer zone as suggested by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And again, we move the route to be beyond the recommended buffer by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So even if they are occupied, even if the construction gets into nesting season, we'll be outside the buffer area. So there should be no impact to those particular birds. The route does cross a designated critical habitat for piping plover as designated on figures 4B3A and 4B4A. However, to avoid disturbance to the habitat, the area is proposed to be crossed by horizontally directionally bored methods. And it would actually be to the wildlife's advantage to actually perform the bore during frozen ground season, because you're going to number one, you're well outside, the nesting period. And so we can get that construction done and get out of the area so we would not disturb them later in the nesting season, possibly by noise that's associated with some other construction seasons. So if, however, that cannot be achieved, they have committed to stay outside of the area from a noise standpoint during the nesting season, which is April 15th through September 1st for piping plover. So what we would do is do a pre-construction survey to see if there's any nesting or animals there. And if that's the case, we would avoid construction. If, again, a nesting pair is found, then they would not resume construction until after September 1st or after the young have fledged.
Okay, and then there's discussion in the application on page 24 and also in the exclusion area table regarding consultation with the U.S. Air Force regarding a cable crossing. Could you just discuss this consultation and your understanding of potential exclusion areas that the Air Force may have an interest in?
Okay. Subsequent to the submission of this application document, we had some additional discussions with the Air Force personnel. And their exclusion criteria are the, I'll call them the missile silo sites themselves, which is a facility, and also their central receiving point or command center, for lack of a better phrase. So that's what they deem as their facilities that are applicable to the exclusion criteria. And in that case, this project will have no impact. We're well outside the designated buffer zone from an exclusion area. There is one instance where the pipeline is proposed to cross beneath one of their communication cables. And based on conversations with the Air Force, this exclusion criteria does not apply to a cable crossing. They have laid out what they would expect as far as coordination when the construction does occur in that immediate vicinity. It's very similar to the coordination required when a pipeline crosses beneath another existing pipeline. So from that standpoint, since we're not near their facilities, we are not at risk of impacting or being subject to the exclusion zones or exclusion criteria.
Okay. And then with respect to any avoidance areas, are there any located within the various areas surveyed? And if so, are they crossed by the project route?
Let's see. The avoidance areas, I believe, are on page 27, table 3C2. And let me see. As we walk through those, there are none as far as crossed by the route. There are no homes within 500 feet of the proposed route of the pipeline.
And then the other two areas are just within the study area, but there will be no impacts expected on this avoidance area criteria?
That's correct. The there are recreational areas within the study area, but not immediately adjacent or crossed by the route, as well as other historical resources, which I've already discussed.
Okay. And will there be any significant adverse effects resulting from location, construction, or operation of the project as they relate to the selection criteria?
No. If you want to look at section C5 in the route permit portion of the combined application, any impacts are going to be temporary in nature.
So only temporary impacts due to construction are all that are anticipated here?
That is correct.
And were the policy criteria set forth in the siting rules considered and utilized to the extent possible when designing the proposed project?
Yes, they were.
Now, I just want to, I know that throughout your testimony, you've discussed some of the various potential impacts and mitigation measures. Are there any additional factors that will be implemented to address impacts for the project?
Yes, there will. The mitigation measures are formalized as Section D of the route permit portion of the application. It was also discussed in Sakakawea's construction mitigation and reclamation plan that's included in the consolidated application as tab 6. The trees and shrubs certification has already been provided by a member of Sakakawea that the tree and shrub mitigation plan will be complied with. Again, I mentioned there are two wetland and water bodies that are U.S. Army Corps of Engineer jurisdictional. And rather than seek a nationwide 12, the company has committed to boring them, which is completely acceptable as well. The cultural resources, they will comply with all the SHPO requirements and recommendations by our subcontractor, Beaver Creek Archaeologists. They are aware of the weeds that we identified, and there will be other various other precautions as outlined in the mitigation plan that they will be taking during construction.
And could you just discuss the coordination efforts with local, state, and federal agencies that were conducted for the project?
K2, on behalf of Sakakawea, notified and consulted with various agencies as required by the commission rules. Tab 5 contains a table of all the agencies contacted and any replies that were received and copies of any of the responses.
And other than the materials contained in in Table 5. Are you aware of other agency comments regarding the project?
Subsequent to the application being submitted, we received a letter on behalf of the project from the North Dakota Department of Health, and the letter was filed with the commission.
All right, and I'll just have you reference Exhibit 7 in the small packet there. Is Exhibit 7 the Department of Health letter you just referenced?
Yes, it is.
And could you just summarize the Department of Health's comments?
The department discussed guidelines for minimizing dust emissions, impacts to water bodies, noise levels, and other environmental damage. The department determined that the project is consistent with the state's plan for control of air pollution.
And are you aware of any objections to the project by state or federal agencies?
We have no knowledge of any problems or concern raised by federal agencies, state agencies, or local entities that were not properly addressed.
Okay. And based on your study and review, your testimony and the exhibits, and the statutes, rules, and regulations the commission considers with respect to these types of applications, in your opinion, are the proposed facilities of such length, design, location, or purpose that they will produce minimal adverse effects?
Yes.
And is it your opinion, will the location and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota?
Yes, it will.
And are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources?
Yes, they are.
And lastly, in your opinion, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion?
Yes, they will.
I have no further questions for this witness.
Thank you. Mr. Pelham?
Well, Ms. Melvin, a few questions for you. I want to start off with the correspondence with the Air Force. And as I understood your testimony, if you just please confirm your testimony, as I understood it at least, that the Air Force doesn't consider a cable crossing as to be a crossing of one of their facilities. Their facility would be either a launch control facility, a command center, or a missile site or something like that. Is that my understanding? Is that correct?
That is our understanding as well.
Okay. So then, as far as the exclusion area and the criteria set by the commission as to areas within 30 feet on either side of a direct line between an ICBM launch or launch control facilities to avoid microwave interference, it's your testimony that that is not the case here. There is no such exclusion area on this project. Is that correct?
There is an exclusion area potentially if they were to install some above-ground surface structure that would interfere with that microwave communication. But in this particular case, there will be no obstacles to that line of sight, that direct line of communication, nor will there be anything in the immediate vicinity of the silo or the command centers.
So then it's correct, and that criteria set by the commission as exclusionary does not apply in this case. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. And then as far as the consultation with Federal Fish and Wildlife Service regarding, let me ask you this, let me back up here, phrase the question here. What consultation was done with federal agencies as to the critical habitat with the piping plover?
Probably most on point was the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was notified of the proposed route.
And they were notified. Did they give any feedback or any indication as to what was being done as far as the mitigation here? Was the buffer zone was going to be the boring underneath the habitat? Did they give any type of feedback on that?
No, they brought to our attention that those species exist or have been reported to exist in that area. They pointed us to the references that identified critical habitat and indicated that mitigation measures were supposed to be implemented to minimize that.
Okay, understood. Thank you, Ms. Spillman. I don't have any other questions for you.
Ms. Prescott, any questions?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. Questions from the commission? Commissioner Fedorchak.
Thank you, Ms. Spillman. You covered a lot of the issues, and quite honestly, with the concurrence letter from the State Historical Preservation Officer, that really puts their expert stamp of approval on the impact that this might have on cultural resources saying there isn't a significant impact, that taken care of. And the fact that there's no exclusion or avoidance areas in the line, that really takes care of a lot of the issues. Some of the wildlife issues have been addressed, so I don't have any questions about all of those sorts of concerns. But I do have just one follow-up on the ICBM issue, and that is, can you tell me what kind of coordination will occur during construction with the Air Force to ensure that, you know, I assume this isn't just the typical, the wire or cable is marked and your contractor is required to avoid it.
Yeah, actually, let me look at my notes here because I believe I have it listed. The key thing is they have, I believe it's a 16.5-foot wide right-of-way that has to be completely avoided. If you're going to cross under the communication cable, they would prefer it to be done at a 90-degree angle to minimize any impact. Separation has to be only minimum of 12 inches, and Sakakawea has actually committed to at least a 3-foot separation. And the crucial thing is you advise them in advance when you approach their right-of-way so they can have a person on staff to physically supervise the actual construction while the line is being crossed. And that practice is pretty standard even amongst other pipeline companies. When you cross under their pipeline, they want somebody there to monitor the construction activity. So that will certainly be complied with.
Okay, good. And so when you say 90 degrees, so you can't come at it at an angle, you have to do a...
The preference would be to come straight across and minimize it. So if the cable's going north and south, they'd prefer you to come, if you're coming in at an angle, come across the right away at a 90-degree angle to this, okay. And that's going to minimize shortest distance between two points.
Understood. All right, that's all. Thank you.
Sure.
Commissioner Calk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Kathleen, for your testimony. It seems like we should ask you a whole bunch more questions, but you've kind of got it buttoned up pretty good today. The only question I would have is the commission is always talking to the SHPA about best ways for them to make sure their cultural data is protected by them. Mm-hmm. And we've had some continued discussion with them. What is your understanding of when you're working with, you know, cultural sites so they can protect the locations to protect the site, of how you file with them, or how do you work that from your viewpoint working with them?
Okay. We typically subcontract that out to one of the other area archaeological firms, but it's my understanding that you prepare the full report with all the information that gets submitted to the SHPO office, the State Historical Preservation Office. And then for permitting purposes for the Public Service Commission applications, that they have asked that nothing gets submitted that's going to be loaded up to the web. And so typically we would have a second version of the full report prepared that redacts anything with specific locations and submit that to the Public Service Commission application. And or depending upon the consultants that the clients have specified that we work with, sometimes we'll just submit an abstract of the full report, which kind of gives you a general, you know, touchy-feely types of information, but does not give you the location. I mean, the crucial thing is the entire report getting into the SHPO office and having their experts review it, look at the data, and make hopefully a determination of no impact, or come back and work a reroute of part of the line that would be inadequate from their perspective as far as protecting cultural resources.
So you yourself haven't dealt directly with the SHPO, one of the subcontractors has done that?
I have, especially when the line gets, I personally have, especially when for one reason or another there is an artifact or a site that I take back to the client and say, hey, you know, they really want you to move the line here because of this reason. Then I'll sit on those. But a lot of times when it's just moving the line, if we get the project early enough and, you know, there's some latitude on where the line goes, I mean, the easiest thing to do is to move the line away from something that needs to be protected. There have been a handful of instances where the alternatives to move it have not been very pretty. And then typically what happens is you step up monitoring. In some cases, the SHPO office will agree to the project if you physically have a archaeologist on site to babysit the contractor so they don't you know, migrate outside of the construction zone. So there's a number of different, sometimes if you're a little further away, we can just have the market with fence posts and flags, so it makes it easier. If it's completely outside the construction zone, then they usually just mark it. But, you know, there have been some instances where they'd like at least a 25-foot separation, and we've had to squeeze it in on a bluff. And they would, the SHPO office will come back, and usually the archaeology consultant will say, you know, we're less than 50 feet buffer, so we're going to recommend to the SHPO office that we physically plant somebody while they're there stripping until they've established that right away, and the risk of damage has gone to almost zero. Sometimes we actually have them pay for archaeologists to sit there until they're out of the immediate vicinity.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Commissioner Christman?
This is kind of related, and the only question I have remaining, but you had mentioned some rock features that were not studied, but are, I think in one case, 100 feet, and in a couple cases, 125 feet away. So are those flagged or something so that even though you probably wouldn't have expected someone to hit them, that nobody just inadvertently drives over there and does some damage since it's within the study area, or do they just...
No, typically we would not highlight those. And from a standpoint, again, of trying to protect their existence, and I think I've testified in front of the commission before, several years ago when this became a problem, people apparently were finding these areas and either, number one, destroying them because they didn't want the pipeline to go to a different location, or a little bit more disturbing is people were going out there and recovering artifacts and selling them or putting them in their personal collection. And it got to a point where the SHPO office came to the consultants and said, you know, can you help us out here? I understand that, you know, Public Service Commission information is generally, you know, public information, but we can do something to prevent it being so easy from people who are not as sensitive to cultural resources and go out there and destroy them for whatever reason. Okay. And so that's why that practice shifted. I want to say, you know, I don't know, it's been kind of a crazy couple of years here, but maybe 3 years ago, I think that practice shifted.
Okay. No other questions. Thank you.
Sure.
Ms. Krause, any redirect?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Pelham, any further questions?
No, Your Honor.
All right. From the commission? All right. Thank you very much for your testimony. Does the applicant rest?
Your Honor, I do need to recall Jason Stelzer to clarify one issue, if that's all right.
Yes. Mr. Stelzer, I just remind you that you're still under oath.
Yes, ma'am.
Please go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Jason, you had previously testified that the block valve located at the midway point of the 8 miles can be operated remotely, correct?
Correct, ma'am.
And is it now your understanding that this valve can only be operated and shut down manually?
That is correct. The valves at either end of the pipeline are motor operated. The block valve in the center is a manual valve.
Okay, but all of the valves and the midway point valve will be installed to DOT regulations, correct?
Correct, ma'am.
Okay, that's all I have, Your Honor.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr. Pelham?
So just so I'm clear, Mr. Stelzer, the valves on each end, the beginning and the end of the proposed line, are able to be remotely operated, just not the midpoint, correct?
Correct, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Prescott, any questions?
No, Your Honor.
Anything from the commission? Yes, Commissioner Cock.
Since you brought it up, I wanted to ask the follow-up question. So given the location of this to Highway 2, do you anticipate any problems getting to that if you had to manually shut it off?
No, sir, and that's partly because you could have personnel on the right-of-way at the time to minimize, you know, that problem. But you having personnel on location, you know, all the time at the Palermo facility itself, takes a minimal amount of time to get to that block valve.
And I agree with that. I just wanted to get it in the record because it's not like this is 30 miles away from a major highway.
Correct, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Krause, any further questions?
No further questions, Your Honor.
Well, hearing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
And now does the applicant rest?
Yes, the applicant rests, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. And Mr. Pelham, any witnesses for the PSC?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you. At this point, and as I indicated at the beginning of the hearing, we have an opportunity to receive testimony from the public. Generally, we receive that testimony supporters first, then opponents, then neutral. But when I look at the siting application public hearing, our sign-up sheet, it indicates that there is one person who would like to testify. So if that person is available and you'd like to testify, please come forward. Would you identify yourself, please, for the record?
Catherine Hilton.
Thank you, Ms. Hilton. Before we begin your testimony, I need to advise you about the penalties for perjury in North Dakota. The maximum penalty for perjury is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum $10,000 fine, a maximum 5 years imprisonment, or both. Would you raise your right hand, please? Do you solemnly swear that the testimony that you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under the penalties of perjury?
I do.
Okay. You can certainly go ahead and tell the commission whatever you'd like to say.
Well, first, I have a couple questions I would like clarified. The first is someone made a comment about there's a new law, I think, in regards to parallel lines. Can someone expand upon that for me? I'm not quite sure what that means.
What I'd like to do first is sort of explain the parameters of our process a little bit to you. As a witness, you're really not in a position to ask questions, but what I would suggest is if you have concerns, perhaps relay those concerns to the commissioners, and to the extent of their ability, and they may call on their counsel to answer your questions for you. Does that make sense to you?
It certainly does.
Okay.
And I guess I would have to use another venue to request that administrative laws be changed.
Well, you can certainly use this opportunity to present your concerns. That's what we're here for.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
So in regards to the parallel line then, and I may be mistaken about this as well, I was under the understanding that at some point in time this Enbridge facility was requesting a proposal to become a diesel refinery as in addition to a storage facility. Now if that is true, and I know that they have one that they were proposing for Berthold as well, but I thought it was a 20,000 barrel a day for Berthold and for Stanley. And if that is the case, then and now there's a new law where they can put, and this, again, I'm unclear on, if there's a new law that would allow them to put a parallel line in without additional processes, then it's so if they get a refinery permit for a diesel refinery, then they're going to lay a parallel line without any additional permitting processes to get diesel to the rail loading facility. So that I have no clarity on whatsoever, and just came up through my hearing, through this hearing today. What I would really like to say is that it's amazing to me the rhetoric of success that you as decision makers have in terms of the oil industry in North Dakota when not a day goes by when there's not a significant adverse impact that's felt by the people who live here. The overburden that is placed on the residents of Northwest North Dakota is tremendous. You can take that in terms of easement and friends I have here who are harassed by landmen on a regular basis, who are intimidated regularly and threatened with eminent domain if they do not voluntarily sign easement agreements. When it comes to reclamation, they're overburdened with invasive species and proper seeding, with people who are trespassing on their property, with inadequate compensation when things do go wrong, and more. They're overburdened with spills, and the lists of those are innumerable, and you can just look at in this week, and it's the second annual Blacktail Creek spill that has just happened. And in this area, the Tesoro spill, that was just several years ago, that reclamation is still continuing on and will still continue for years after this. A few months ago, when you had the several thousand barrels of oil and toxic brine that spilled into the White Earth River. And these are just a few, the tip of the iceberg when it comes down to it. So, and then you get the overburden of the societal impacts, which cannot be treated separately from a permit proposal for a pipeline because it is all interconnected. You know, you can look in the papers this morning about 9 overdoses from heroin in Williston. You get the drastic increase in vehicular deaths, the stress on emergency services, on infrastructure, on schools, on housing, on local governments. These things are continue to happen. And so this leads me to, how do we get out of the mindset of pipelines versus some other type of transit, and how are we really addressing? Well, perhaps it's how we're exploiting oil in North Dakota that is the problem, and we shouldn't be permitting any more pipelines until we have a situation that's already bad under control. And so to me and to the people I work with, and I'm a volunteer, by the way, I'm not being paid to be here right now, is that, you know, the real public service is going to be to deny this permit and really look at what other solutions do we have that are going to allow people to continue to inhabit this area and keep their lives in the way that they live and continue farming and ranching and being school teachers and all of the other jobs that are available in this area and that this area thrives on without putting more undue burden of the oil industry on the residents of this area. That is my conclusion of my comment for y'all. For the audience here, hi. My name's Catherine Hilton, and I am a volunteer, as I said. And as you can tell from how I speak, I'm not a North Dakotan, but I do live in Mandan. And I feel that I share a lot of values as North Dakotans, and that as such, it's my duty and my moral obligation to help provide assistance where I can to people who are frustrated with the way that the oil industry and our government relations people are allowing the oil industry to treat North Dakotans. So I'll be here after this meeting, and if any of you would like to talk to me about what we can do as residents. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Hilton. Just for the record, you indicated that you are a volunteer. Can you tell me if you're representing any particular organization today?
I'm representing no organization, and I would prefer not to disclose the members of the communities that I work with at this time.
Thank you. Ms. Krause, do you have any questions for Ms. Hilton?
You covered the only question that I had, Your Honor, so I don't have any questions for this witness, and we just thank you for being here.
Thank you. Mr. Pelham, any questions?
Ms. Hilton, I understand that you would prefer not to provide the names of those who are volunteering, but I think it's important for the purposes of the record to identify who you are volunteering on behalf of.
Residents of Stanley and White Earth and Williston and Grassy Butte.
So just individual residents, do you have any type of formal organization that you're volunteering for?
No, I do work with a collaborative called the Extreme Energy Extraction Collaborative, but I would be the only representative of that organization in North Dakota.
Okay. And you testified, ma'am, that you live in Mandan, so am I safe in assuming that you do not own any of the property along this proposed route in this case?
That would be correct.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Hilton.
Ms. Prescott, any questions?
No, Your Honor.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Yeah, good afternoon. I think it's afternoon now. Good afternoon, Catherine. Thanks for sticking it out and stepping forward and sharing your concerns. And I do encourage you on some of your questions to take either our staff or the company staff aside after the hearing and ask them your questions, or you can call our office after the fact as well and have some of those questions that you have answered.
Thank you.
I think it's always kind of confusing, and we should probably do a better job at the front of our hearings explaining kind of what sorts of testimony citizens can provide in this forum, because you're not the first person that has come up in a hearing and wanted to have some questions answered. So I think you have some legitimate ones and some issues you want a better understanding of, and we're happy to provide that. So please take advantage of that offer. In terms of some of the issues you mentioned, I haven't heard about the diesel facility, but that's not to say it isn't happening. Depending on the size of it, we may or may not be involved in permitting of such a facility. So, but we haven't received an application for a diesel refinery in this area. We hear these issues of concerns over and over again, and the only approach I can take and know how to take as a person elected to represent North Dakotans is to take them one by one and try to address them, because we're required to operate within the law and the parameters that the legislature, elected by the citizens of the state, have provided for us, and they're pretty specific. And so when I hear concerns like you've cited, I listen to them and try to address them one by one. So you talk about the harassment of citizens to sign easements. That's not allowed. They aren't allowed to do that, and those folks should be taking those issues to us in a hearing or other entities along the way. That's prohibited, to have people threatened for signing easements. In terms of the reclamation issues, we've heard that frequently, and we've worked hard to include more and more criteria in our permits and ways to hold the companies responsible for high reclamation. We cannot do anything about it if we don't know there's a problem. So that's one of the issues that we've also tried to address, getting the word out to citizens that when there's a line that the PSC has permitted that isn't being properly reclaimed, all they have to do is call us. And we will, and have many times, intervened on behalf of the citizens and got resolution to the issues. So that is something that I grew up on and spent most summers on a farm just like 20 miles south of here. So this is an area that's near and dear to my heart as well. The reclamation is an issue there. We don't have a lot of tolerance for poor reclamation, and we will work with the companies and require them to restore it. It's possible. It's done all the time, and that's what we live by. And in terms of the spills, every single spill, we have one of the highest spill reporting standards in the country, and every single spill is cleaned up. It might not happen overnight. It might take time. But the reality is, in North Dakota, our law allows for orderly development of these energy resources. It doesn't prohibit development. And so that's the balance that commissions like us and the Industrial Commission and others are working every day to achieve. And we do it by citizens like you stepping forward and saying, here's something wrong, and we work through it. So I don't know how else to address these issues besides, you know, a blanket not allowing something to be developed, which would be a change in law that you'd have to take up and get the legislature to pass. So thank you for your concerns. And if you have others, and when you're working with your communities, please encourage them to call us, reach out with their specific issues and their solutions for them, because people like myself and my colleagues and others want to hear that.
Commissioner Cock.
Thank you, Your Honor. Catherine, thank you for having the courage to step forward and say your piece. It it says a lot when you people are willing to do that. Commissioner Fedorchuk, I think, hit on all the points I was going to hit on as far as the process, but I'll just hit on a couple other. The points you bring out, I think, are well warranted about pipeline safety. I've spent almost, that's been my number one priority since I've been here, pipeline safety, whether it's crude oil pipelines or natural gas to homes, to make sure we can, you know, get cut down the number of incidents. So we're going to keep working on that. But as far as a larger picture about oil production, I just, you know, you shared your thoughts, so I'll share mine. My grandpa was born in Palermo, just up the road. And so it's a farming and ranching state. And we're trying to incorporate energy development into it because I think it's good for the state. I think it's really good for the country. I was in Desert Storm and I was in Iraq. And I think our country fights wars over oil. Absolutely. So every bit of oil that we can develop in the United States means less troops that are deploying, less guys and gals getting killed. And someday we can have an economy that's not based on petroleum products. I think that'd be great too. But in the interim, I think we're charged with doing orderly development, trying to find that balance. And I think that your points are critical to the argument. And so stay in the fight, but understand that, you know, we're in this for the right reason, too, to make sure we find that balance. And that's why you talk about the rhetoric that we're pro-oil. And that's your viewpoint. My rhetoric is I'm pro-American. And I think that we can make sure we do it correctly, safely, keep things going. But the U.S. is in a precarious situation. We don't have our own ag security or our own energy security. And I think North Dakota brings that to the table. And so, yeah, we're going to fight for those kind of things. And I appreciate you being here, but expect that we're going to say our piece too. So thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Christman?
I have a couple questions for you. So how long have you been in North Dakota?
A year and a half. And before I was here, I was in the shale fields of Southwest Pennsylvania.
Okay, so I don't know how similar our laws are to Pennsylvania's, but are you familiar with the setup here that, first of all, under North Dakota law, really neither the Public Service Commission nor the Industrial Commission or any other state agency has control over private agreements that a mineral owner would make with the oil companies?
Sure.
Okay, and then as far as the permitting process for drilling oil wells, are you familiar with that? That is the Industrial Commission as opposed to us?
Yes.
Okay, so we have this kind of a fuzzy line. I guess it's not fuzzy to us, but for most people, I think it probably is, which things in the oil industry the Industrial Commission regulates as opposed to which things we regulate. So I just want to point that out. So in that, for our decision-making here, we don't control when someone makes a deal with an oil company to extract their oil and gas.
Sure.
And we also don't control if the Industrial Commission permits the well, and so they go ahead and do it. Once it's going to be drilled and moved to market, do you think, you had mentioned drug overdoses, highway accidents, school issues, as well as oil pipeline incidents, which do you think is the safer way to move that oil if it's going to be drilled anyway to market, through pipelines or on the highways with trucks?
Well, that in of itself can be a complex question, because I had someone email me earlier today who lives in this area. And this was in regards to the toxic brine, that she would prefer it to be moved by truck, because then when an incident happens, at least it's the contained to the amount that can fit in that truck that's going to spill. So I don't think that's fair. I don't like the false solution of either or, because there are options out there that include neither of those or further development of oil in this state. And, you know, you talk a lot about having the highest standards or things that are prohibited, or, But you know, the residents I deal with get really tired of having to deal with problems, with having to come to commissions that don't really listen to them because they continue to permit more of these pipelines to go in communities. And, you know, talking about energy independence in the United States, well, I don't really see how poisoning our air and water so that we can get oil is a way of securing the future of America. And I think that's probably where we're going to have some real disagreements. And that's okay because, you know, people are supposed to have disagreements, and coming to future agreements is part of how we grow as people. But I think there needs to be a real recognition that there's some really terrible things that are happening in North Dakota right now because of how we're letting oil exploit us.
If you could kind of constrain the answer to the question of which you thought was the safer method, I guess.
I don't see either as a safer method. I think that's a false solution that's been presented to us.
Okay, my other question is, you had mentioned harassing and threatening landowners for easements. It certainly would be a very serious thing as a landowner who has not had oil or gas pipelines, but water pipelines and power lines and things like that come over my property. And it's, you know, it's, it seems like it. Most of us always wish it would be over on the neighbor's land, but I've dealt with these things, and if there's specific evidence of that, I would take that very seriously. In this case, on this 8-plus-mile stretch, any of your members or associates, do you have any evidence that that has happened in this case that you're bringing to us?
Not specific for this line, no.
Okay. And we're constrained to making our decision based on the evidence in the case in front of us. So I have no other questions, but thank you for being here.
Thank you. Any other questions from the commission? From the parties?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Pelham?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else from the public who'd like to testify today? All right, thank you. At this point, is there any other matter which anyone of the parties wishes to bring to the attention of myself or the commission?
Anything Nothing else? From the applicant, Your Honor.
Mr. Pelham?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. There was a reference to the possibility of a late filed exhibit for a 10-year plan. Is that still needed, Commissioner Fedorchuk?
Sure. If the company can just make sure that that's submitted and we can add it to the official record, that'd be great.
Sure, the company will do that.
All right, then we'll leave the record open for that. Is there any other late filed exhibits anticipated, Mr. Pelham?
No, I think that encompasses the only one, Judge.
Okay. Is there a need for closing arguments, Ms. Krause?
No closing from the applicant, Your Honor.
Mr. Pelham?
No, Your Honor.
All right. And no briefs, I'm assuming.
No.
Will there be a proposed findings of fact, conclusions of law, and a recommended order provided by the applicant?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. Then I guess that takes care of that, and I would certainly take closing comments from the commissioners. Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the public members who came here and listened to this. One of them I meant to mention earlier, but John Cameron from Senator Hovind's office. Appreciate you being here, John, and taking part of this and for all your work on behalf of Senator Hovind. If anybody has questions for John, he's here, and I'm sure would be happy to visit with folks as well. This was a good hearing, pretty straightforward application. I appreciated the company's efforts to provide the information that we've kind of asked for frequently at different meetings or hearings, including the emergency response plan and some of the discussion about your reclamation plans, et cetera. So I encourage the members of the public, if you have more questions on this, we've got a lot of information filed. Our staff is available as well. The record will be closed, but we can certainly answer questions that you might have moving forward and also any additional concerns from you regarding this project or others. So thanks for being here and have a safe and happy day.
Thank you. Commissioner Cog?
Just thank you all for coming out there. Catherine Hilton, thank you for saying your piece. It's important. It really is. That's why we're up here, to get public testimony and the everything that goes on out there. We hear and listen and try to make decisions appropriately. So thanks for coming. The rest of you that have stopped by today, I think Julie laid it out there. You know, we'll make a decision on this and move forward. But I will go back to, you know, the North Dakota we've all grew up with. We need to make sure we keep it going forward, whether it's ag or energy. And the more input we get on cases, the better decisions we make. So thank you for all being here today.
Commissioner Chrisman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a few closing thoughts, and I'm going to march it going in reverse order in time. First of all, thanks to the company for presenting, I think, a pretty good case. Many cases we have more questions than what I had in this one, and to some extent it's because it's a short pipeline, but to some extent it's because it was well presented. So thank you for that. Then moving back a little bit, I don't know if I ever mentioned to my colleagues that I had the opportunity to serve in the Senate before I came to the Public Service Commission. So I love to talk about that. And I served in the Senate until November of 2012 when I was elected to this position. And near the end of those years in the Senate, one of the things that we heard so frequently, because the oil patch was booming and people in this part of the state, and I don't mean even just specifically to here in the heart of the oil patch, we were hearing this all the way from Botno and Minot down to Dickinson and Bowman and really most all of western North Dakota. What people were coming and telling their legislators was, this is happening. Now, whether some thought it was bad that it was happening, some thought it was good that it was happening, but they all agreed it was a reality that it was happening. And you guys, and in those conversations, when people deal with their local legislators, they don't care whether it's the legislature or the Public Service Commission or the Industrial Commission or the courts or who, they consider it their government. They said, you guys have got to do something about this. You have to get these trucks off the road. We're being inundated with dust. We can't get from point A to point B with our farm machinery. And people are being injured and killed and maimed on these highways. You've got to get some of these trucks off the road. Now, there, in this industry, there will always be truck traffic, and that's a good thing. But it was too much, and they wanted more pipelines. And to some extent, that has happened, and to some extent, it is continuing to happen. So I just wanted to point that out in light of Ms. Hilton's comments. And by the way, thank you, Ms. Hilton, for being here, because as I said in the beginning, we all get better when we get different opinions and different ideas presented to us. Now I want to march back even farther to when I first got into the Senate in the 1990s. Welcome, Ms. Hilton, to North Dakota. You're one of about 50 or 75,000 people that have joined us in North Dakota from other states in these last 15 years. And I'll tell you what I used to hear back in the 1990s. I used to hear from parents and grandparents whose children or grandchildren were maturing and getting ready to get out of high school or college and were prepared to leave the state because it didn't really matter what kind of career path they chose. There was no opportunity here, nothing. And they came to us in the legislature worrying that if their children left the state once, they would probably never come back. And you know what I had to tell them? The answer was, you're right, they probably never will come back, and it'll take a long time to get this ship turned around because things don't change quickly. Although in this case in North Dakota, it did change kind of quickly with the new ability to extract oil out of the shale. And so it happened more quickly than I thought. But I will just close by saying there are problems with this oil industry. There are spills, there are car accidents, there are drug overdoses. Those are realities, and those are realities we need to continue to work on to get better at. But the fact of the matter is, whatever problems we have in North Dakota right now, I prefer to the problems that we had in the 1990s when our problem was no opportunity for the young people. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. And with that, we'll close the hearing for today. The record will remain open for that late filed exhibit. Thank you.